College holds a mythic place in American culture. But there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Ronald Serpas, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD chief, former chief of Nashville PD, and also the head of the Washington State Police. And as I said earlier, he's been exposed to juvenile justice systems and adult justice systems in three separate states. So he speaks with authority on a lot of what works, what doesn't work from the perspective of having visited three different states, and I appreciate that. Ronald, welcome to the show.
Hey, Newell. It's always good to be with you. How are you?
Good. Ronnie, I want to try and approach this way, get to the question of the, you know, sending the feds into D.C. We have a lot of folks that are saying that D.C. is the safest that it's been in 30 years, and that very well may be true. But how do you define high crime? I mean, let's tackle that first, because if you look at President Trump's release, he says that in 2024, D.C. saw a homicide rate of 27.3 per 100,000 residents, the fourth highest homicide rate in the country, six times higher than New York City, higher than Atlanta, Chicago, and Compton. And if D.C. was a state, it would have the highest homicide rate of any state in the nation. In 2012, the homicide rate in D.C. was just 13.9 per 100,000 residents. Their population has been pretty stable. It's grown here recently by about 35,000 people. They have a population of around 702,250. So how do you define high crime? Where do you start?
I think the first thing is there's none so blind as those who refuse to see. 27 homicides per 100,000 is going to drop to 24 if they have a better year this year versus 13 just a decade ago. So you got to see what you got to see. Secondly, you and I've talked about this before. The government measures crime data. Secondly, we know that the government data is half wrong just because people don't call. Thirdly, a D.C. police commander was suspended in May for fudging the crime numbers. And fourth, crime is a perception that people feel from what they hear from their friends, families, and neighbors, more so true to them than anything else we just said. So, you know, when you and I were in this business, you half a century, me only 45 parts of a century, I think we both knew intuitively that a crowd of people don't really give a damn about your crime numbers. They care that they don't feel safe, that their neighbor said they was robbed, their family member says they lost their car. So that's the quagmire that I think politicians are stuck in because they somehow or another believe, many, not all, that these crime numbers are mythical and they're magical and they can make everything all better. They don't. People feel crime. The government reports numbers. People feel crime.
And then when you look at, I've never been one to really believe that the homicide rate was really reflective of the overall crime of violence rate in a community or other types of crimes, because a lot of those murders, as we well know, are relational. The victim and the perpetrator know one another. There's a conflict that brings them to that confrontation. Which is different than a lot of other crimes, right?
Well, that's absolutely right. And from a research point of view, when we know everything that we can know about a murder or a sexual assault, generally about 8 times out of 10, there was some sort of a knowledge between the people of one another. Robberies, on the other hand, be they with a weapon, which is an armed robbery, or with a fist, which is a simple robbery, those are almost 90% somebody you don't know. When someone breaks into your car, right? Oh, Lou, this is a good point. You and I had to deal with this a lot. we count crimes the way the FBI said to count them, going all the way back to the 1930s. They determined in this crime capture mechanism that we still use today that a property crime is a burglary. Well, there ain't nothing more personal to anybody on earth than somebody breaking into their house. So, again, the crime data misleads people to think that somehow or another the government thinks burglary is less important than getting beat up. It's more important because you're the victim. So, as you said, crimes of murder, crimes of sexual assault, they almost always know one another in some way. That doesn't make it better. It just means that's what we know. But if you're walking down the street and somebody punches you in the back of the head, a group of juveniles, and takes your wallet, yeah, that's a serious violent crime to you.
Absolutely. And, you know, so it's kind of interesting because there's a split in the mainstream media as to is this necessary? Is it as bad as what the president is saying? You know, that crime is on the decrease there. That's why I wanted to start with, well, what is high crime? I mean, you know, and I think you laid it out perfectly as to what it really is and the feeling that people have in their community, the place that they call home. So let's talk about
Absolutely. Going
in now. So we go in, and this is where I have some of my bigger problems with this, is that, you know, this short-term versus long-term strategy. And what is it that we can actually do? Because without congressional approval, it looks like the president has the authority to kind of do things in about 30-day snippets there, with the exception of federal law enforcement and tasking them to do certain things inside of the district. Your thoughts?
I think that might speak to something I'm as expert as you, and that would be this. If the president and the statutes, and I'm sure you've already covered this with the audience, he's using a particular statute that's unique to the D.C. government that is part of the relationship historically between the federal government and the District of Columbia. So that's a statute that has nothing to do with the Insurrection Act. But I think your point about 30 days is really crucially important, because if they were to make a big difference in 30 days, then maybe that's all they would kind of get done to put pressure on the local government to perform differently. I don't know. I'm like you, I have some questions in my mind how much you could really get done in 30 days. But I also know this. If you were living in Avondale in the 80s and 90s, or you were living in the Ninth Ward in the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 2010s, 20s, and anybody said they were going to do anything to try to help you self safer, they felt good about it.
Oh, they would absolutely support it. For the most part. I mean, it's interesting to hear the leadership of D.C. and their reaction. I mean, this is like a threat to democracy. This is all over. I got to imagine if you interviewed.
The threat to democracy is the councilman who got reelected after taking bribes that he's going on trial for. I mean, that's when it starts to become very political and kind of silly. Now, I can't disclose everything because I am a professional consultant. I happen to know a lot about that place in very recent times. And like many large departments, they're struggling with things that everybody does. Recruitment, retention, equipment, very strict labor rules about employment and such. But that doesn't mean they can't learn and they can't do better things. Chuck Ramsey, a dear friend of mine and yours, went there with all those same questions and all those same quarrels, and he made a huge difference. The question is, who's going to make a huge difference? If the president thinks he can make a huge difference in 30 days, maybe it'll just be enough to spark them thinking differently from where they are today.
Yeah, you know,
I don't want to tell you? I always get the biggest kick out of when people say, we should feel good that crime went down this year. That's like saying the Saints should feel good because instead of losing 9, they only lost 8. It's a political way of answering a question that the media gobbles up as if it's some words from the text of the Bible. But the people in the community go, we still lost half the time. What do you mean it's better? It's not better.
And that's what, you know, we try to politicize this thing so much, and you know, the reality is that this is the nation's capital. And I think you would agree with me. They got more attention from a financial perspective, programmatically, almost a blank check in many respects. They certainly got the lion's share of every granting program that ever existed, at least while I was in law enforcement. Everybody envied what they and the New York Police Department got in that respect. We got, you know, crumbs, and they got the whole enchilada. And, you know, so they have no excuses there. Now, how they ultimately ended up spending the money, I don't know, but I remember hearing a lot of stories that were not very favorable.
Well, they have a unique circumstance that cuts both ways for them. One, if there's a First Amendment speech protest, they have to police it, and they do a lot of that. I mean, I'll give them all credit. Mm-hmm. I've seen the data. They do a lot of that. But the other thing that cuts in their favor that the D.C. political leadership probably doesn't want to talk about is that every alphabet federal agency that's headquartered in D.C. has some sort of a uniform function. The FBI has a uniform function. The Secret Service has a uniform function. All those uniformed members of the federal government protecting their buildings looks the same to a citizen as a D.C. police officer. So it looks like there's a lot of cops there. Where it gets to become quite sticky is when you get outside of the main D.C., you know, cube, and you get out into some of those neighborhoods, Anacostia and some of those other ones, and there are some serious violent crimes that have been going on since the 1990s. You may remember, now that I'm thinking about it, my dear friend, your dear friend, and my personal mentor, Richard Pennington, he was hired here by Mark Morial, and one of the key reasons he hired him is because he was coming from a very dangerous city to help make our dangerous city better. Remember? So
yep,
D.C. has always had this issue. And I think Richard did a tremendous job for us, and he was a great friend for us, but he got hired because he came from a place that had a worse crime problem than we did. Imagine that. That was in 1994.
So, Ronnie, when we got to get to a break, when we come back, I want to think in the context going back to the short-term versus long-term strategy and that friction point relative to policing in D.C. We'll be right back. We're visiting with Ronald Surpass, professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola and former NOPD chief. Vehicle theft.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Washington, D.C. is more than three times the national average, ranking it amongst the most dangerous cities in the world. Carjackings increased 547% between 2018 and 2023. And in 2024, there were triple the number of carjackings compared to 2018. These are the type of crimes that you were talking about, Chief, earlier, that really gets people on edge, right? They're looking over their shoulder. They're feeling very uncomfortable. They don't like leaving their home.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the federal government has limitations on juvenile crime, obviously, but they don't have a limitation on some of those types of crimes. As we both know, there are federal statutes that allow some prosecution at the federal level for different types of robberies. I would expect that in this short period of time, they may take some actions in that regard and then put political pressure. And, you know, it's been in our career 50 years ago when you started, Linda Ronstadt, You're No Good was the number one song. Recommend you put that on your show. But, you know, We've seen the iteration of parents should be responsible. It's really not parents' fault. Parents should be responsible. It's not parents' fault. Two quick comments on that. For every one child that's making bad decisions in a city like New Orleans or D.C., there's hundreds who don't. We need to celebrate those families for taking care of their children. And for the one child that tells their parent at 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm going out for the night, then obviously they are not getting the job done. But a sage advice was given to me a long time ago by a politician. If you're waiting for the government to raise your children, nothing good comes from that.
That is no doubt, no doubt at all. Interesting, you know, there's a lot of similarities of the challenges that we've had here in the city as it relates to the challenges of what they're having in D.C. Relative to juvenile justice. At some point, something's got to give, right? I mean, you can't just keep perpetuating and pollinating criminal behavior and think it's going to ultimately go away.
Well, what's truly sad, and you and I have a bias, and I want to be honest with the audience, I can't unsee the things I've seen as a police officer. You can't unsee the things you've seen. And we recognize that bias, but we also recognize that there are families, not unlike these great mafia stories that we've read about since the 30s, who focus on crime. That's their livelihood, and there are some people in the world who recoil when you say that as if somehow or another they're the victims of society and it's not their fault. No. You and I have seen crime families, not just the familial ones, but the actual crime families that are friends or neighbors or even cousins. And they are deadly serious about their business, and we have to be just as serious about policing them. That hasn't changed over the last 45 years for me or 50 years for you.
No, not at all. So when we talk about short-term versus long-term strategy, obviously what's going on here is it's a short-term pump in some assets, try to do some things. And I think you're right. It's an attempt to get people to recognize, look at themselves in the mirror critically and say, hey, maybe we need to be more aggressive. Maybe we need to be more proactive. Maybe we need to focus on some things that we haven't focused on.
Well, I'll say this to you, Newell, and I'm not going to want to get political, but I do remember that the border couldn't be controlled for 4 years. And right. The president now said, we just needed a new president, and look what happened. Maybe that's the message they're trying to send to these cities, is that maybe you just need a new way of being mayor or a new way of being chief. Maybe we don't need new rules and new policies and new procedures. We do need a new theme song, You're No Good, Linda Ronstadt, 1974, number one pop song. But thank you for having me today.
I love you, my friend.
You're the best, Newell. You are the best.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you for taking time out today. I know you are busy. But I think you probably have been in the game longer than me.
Well, if you count when I ran from the police, maybe.
Have a great week.
All right. Thank you, brother.
We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margo Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.